Democratic Senator Tim Cullen from Janesville. Tim, thanks for the interview. You have a very unique perspective on the Senate. You served in the Senate from 1975 to 1989. You led the Senate as the Senate Majority Leader for 4.5 years in the 1980s. You were reelected in November. Now you're back 10, 11 weeks into the 2009 session. It must have been, from your perspective, a fascinating comeback to the Senate, given the events of the last 3 weeks where you and other Senate Democrats went to Illinois. Can you talk about your stay in Illinois a bit?
Well, first of all, it was no picnic. Northern Illinois in February is not your first vacation spot. Most of the days were like they would be if I were in my district, not if I was in Madison, obviously, but if I was in the district, I'd be meeting with constituents. In this case, it was by phone. I was calling people back. I was checking my office, who was called, and so on. And I was making phone calls to friends and stuff, and doing a lot of the things I'd do if I was in Janesville on a weekday rather than in Madison. Sure. And then we had caucuses almost every day, sometimes for 3 or 4 or 5 hours. Sure. We had a bunch of media calls, as you well imagine, and trying to respond to them, particularly the ones from my district. So that was sort of the day. It was every day my cell phone would run low and the battery would run low. And that's never occurred before, since I've had a cell phone, that I ever talked so much on the phone that the battery ran low. It happened every day down there.
As a former leader of the Senate, was it your idea that the Senate Democrats could block the budget fix-up bill if they went to Illinois?
No, it was not my idea. In fact, I wasn't even in the caucus that decided to go, because by coincidence, that was the same day that my very, very great friend, Justice Bill Babbage, had died. And the Babbage family had asked me to be their spokesperson. They had copies of his obituary. And they'd asked me, because we were aware that Bill was probably going to die any day there. And I was to come to the Capitol and inform the Capitol Press Corps of Justice Babbage's death. And they had some people they were wanting me to suggest that people call for comments about his life. And that was exactly the same morning, by sheer coincidence, that the decision was made by the caucus to go to Illinois. So I wasn't there.
So you were honoring your best friend, and you get a call, pack it up, we're going to the state of Illinois?
That's exactly what happened.
Your reaction?
I said, what? First of all, and then I got some explanation. And I said, okay, I'll meet you down there. They're going to be in Rockford at the clock tower. And I said, I'll get there when I can. And I went down there, but I was not part at all of the decision to go, although I agreed with the decision to go.
You agreed with it?
I agreed with it.
That's important.
And I still think it was the right thing to do. It was an extraordinary thing to do without question.
Absolutely.
And that's why I have this constitutional amendment that I'm talking about.
Yep, I'm going to ask you about that next.
But my thought was that I think there was a lot of thinking at the time it would be a very short stay. And I think that if there was anything, everything could be second-guessed, but if there was anything that could have been done differently, was there should have been some more discussion about, you know, what's the strategy to get back to Madison? What's the exit strategy out of Illinois to get back here? And there never was one.
There never was one.
No, it was just stay. And stay is not a strategy.
Which is the reason that you and others would meet with different people, aides to the governor, to try to talk about a way to come back?
Right.
But you were not trying to submarining your party's leader, Senator Miller, were you?
No, he knew what I was doing.
Okay.
And I think, to be clear, we were not trying to negotiate, usually with Senator Jalk and me, we were not trying to negotiate the bill into a form acceptable to us Democrats, that we could have possibly, that was impossible. You could not have negotiated a bill to our satisfaction that would have been ever acceptable to the governor. So the negotiations were entirely about, both sides understood it, or discussions, negotiations, whatever you want to call them. It was all about how many changes of the bill would they be willing to agree to in exchange for us coming back. Not to vote yes, but to come back and make it a little better and debate it and vote no. We were gonna oppose it. They couldn't make it good enough. Mm-hmm. We knew that. Mm-hmm. But that was the structure of the discussions.
Now, you care about the Senate, having served here from 75 to 89, and now you're back. So you care about the Senate and the way it works. Where is the level of trust? Is between Democrats and the GOP senators. How much damage was done by you and the other Senate Democrats going away for 3 weeks?
Well, I think there was some damage done to the integrity of the Senate. I think the way they passed the bill and the way they abused the use of a conference committee and how they passed the bill without debate in 5 minutes, I mean, and how they were going to originally ram the thing all the way through here, which is why we went to Illinois in the first place, was to slow it down. I think all those actions did damage the integrity of the Senate, which is to say, in my view, all 33 of us, some way or another, played a part in this. Maybe the only exception is might be Senator Dale Schultz of Richland Center, who had a principal position, kept it, and voted against the bill. Mm-hmm. But I think at least 32 of us, if not all of us, played a part in creating this division that occurs in the Senate today. Now, is it? People say, well, it can't be put back together for a long, long time. I don't agree with that. I think it can be. I've reached out and called some Republican senators, and our personal relationships are fine. And there are some people who I would sort of generally characterize them on the more right-wing part of the Republican Party, mm-hmm. and the more left-wing part of the Democratic caucus. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that maybe have the strongest feelings and may take some time. But I still think, not as many as there used to be, but I still think there's several senators, maybe as many as 12 to 15, that are still kind of, if they had their druthers, would kind of be more in the middle. And I think our relationships are fine, but it'll take a while. And a lot of this is going to be about leadership. It's going to be about Senator Fitzgerald and Senator Miller.
Are you offering your constitutional amendment, which I'm going to ask you to explain, as one way to mend the breach in the Senate, Senator?
That's one of my purposes. There's two purposes. One is that one, which is sort of short term. It's sort of a signal that, you know, this is something that was an extraordinary thing to do and should not become a commonplace event. I mean, because once you do something around here, there's a precedent, and then, you know, well, let's do it again. We don't like the next bill. Let's go to Illinois. Maybe a different
one. What about on the budget bill?
Maybe
it doesn't
budget
sound,
bill.
Doesn't sound like any of you Democrats like the budget bill that's going to be debated here for the next 3 months. Can you envision you Senate Democrats packing up again, sir?
I can't envision it. I will not go.
You will not go.
I mean, that's not a
why?
Debate.
Why?
Because I think this was an extraordinary thing to do on this piece of legislation, but it was a terrible precedent. And because, you know, parties change, parties in control change around here over time. And this becomes the commonplace answer to all minorities that object to legislation. It really will just, you know, destroy the ability of the Senate to function. If this is sort of the and why I want to change the Constitution is because it's going to happen again. There's already people now today saying, well, now that the judge has enjoined this bill from being published, oh, you guys, and they have to do a do-over bill. Will you guys go to Illinois again to stop the do-over bill?
Well, as a former Senate leader, do you think the GOP should have a mulligan and have a do-over bill?
Well, the judge, I understand, sort of steered them that way in her decision that if they did a do-over bill, it would negate all the legal action today.
All the open records issues?
I'm not. If I were there, I suppose I would do it over again.
You would?
Not because I like this bill. I mean, just process-wise. And I hope they do it over again. I have a personal interest in it. I hope they do it over again because I'm hoping we can have a chance to amend it to some of the things we were discussing with the governor's staff when we were in Illinois.
Okay.
I mean, we can't make this bill good enough that we'd vote for it. Mm-hmm. But we can make it a lot better for a lot of little people out there who we're supposed to be caring about here. We're not supposed to be caring about recalls and who got an upper leg and recalls. We're supposed to be worried about the people who are affected by our legislation.
Your constitutional amendment, one newspaper referred to it as an olive branch. So it is?
Yes.
Why don't you explain what it would do?
Well, the Constitution today, and since its inception, 1848, when we became a state, Article 8, Section 8, says that on bills that have a fiscal effect, simply it's a lot of words, but the effect is that bills that have a fiscal effect need three-fifths of the Senate present in order to pass it, which three-fifths ends up being like 19.8, so they rounded to 20. So it takes 20 senators present
to pass a spending bill.
Pass a spending bill. I And right now, with Republicans having 19, obviously it takes one Democrat to have there be 20. This only becomes an issue when the majority is either 17, 16, 18, 15, or 19, 14. If it gets to 20, 13, they don't need somebody. We're researching, we got people talking to people in New York State, which is where we got this language from in 1848. We're talking to other scholars around the country, trying to figure out, understand why this was put in the Constitution in the first place. This is not definitive, but there's some evidence that the reason why this was put in there, both in New York and here, had to do with travel conditions in the 1840s. That the purpose was to give time. That he didn't want to pass bills to spend money until a substantial portion of the Senate and Assembly was here, and they came down with the number 3/5. Like they could have said 2/3, I suppose, but they said 3/5, because of course, in the 1840s, for someone to travel from Senator Jelks' district from Superior,
yes. Yes.
On horseback in the wintertime could be a 5 or 6 day trip, I suppose, and so that's one of the theories that we've heard about why it was in there, but we don't know for sure. But if you think about it, if that's the reason it's in the Constitution, today we have interstates and airplanes. We really don't need to protect the inability of some legislator to get here quickly. You can get here quickly today. But it is going to be important to know what was the thinking of the people who wrote our Constitution, why they included that. We don't know for sure.
Senator Miller said yesterday he doesn't think any other Senate Democrat is going to co-sponsor your change. True?
Well, I think he's working hard on that. But I know of at least one. I'll leave his name out so he can announce it himself. But I know at least one of our Democratic senators told me directly that he's going to co-sponsor it.
Okay.
And I don't know how many there have to be. And I'm not worried about some numbers game about how many co-sponsors there are.
How does the Senate that you left in 1989 compare to the Senate of 2011, sir?
Unrecognizable, I think would be one word. Almost everything has changed in terms of the process. In the 70s and 80s, there were not these big independent expenditure third-party groups with now the ability to spend money anonymously, don't have to disclose donors. The size of those... The largest money spent in campaigns then were spent by the candidates' campaigns, the Democratic candidate, Republican candidate. That's where most of the money was spent. There was little outside expenditure of money. That's the biggest thing that's changed, because if you had a $200,000 state Senate campaign combined, all spending, that's a pretty big campaign then. Now we have $2 million.
How much did you spend last year?
$53,000. Yep.
Was there a lot of third-party spending?
No, I was very fortunate that there wasn't. I also didn't, even though I could take $1,000 from anybody who wanted to give it, I limited my contribution to $250. I didn't take more than $250 from anybody. I didn't take any PAC money. I didn't take any money from lobbyists.
Well, in an era when Senate campaigns, when you throw in third parties, can cost $2-3 million, were you outspent?
No, I think I haven't seen my opponent's campaign report, but it was pretty close. I think I'll spend it by a little bit, but I'm not sure. It's $5,000 either way.
Okay. Does it hurt you with your other Senate Democrats when Governor Walker calls you, as he did, the only reasonable one?
It doesn't help win a popularity prize in the caucus, no. But, I believe I am reasonable. I don't think I'm the only reasonable one.
Is your caucus split? I mean, some people have said this is about you and Jauk trying to be the leader instead of Senator Miller. Is there unity there?
No. I have no desire to be minority leader. The minority leader has to do a lot of extra work that I have no desire to do, recruiting candidates, raising money, running off to fundraisers all over the state. I mean, that's just not something that, in my point in my life, that's not why I ran. I'm not interested in those things. And Senator Jauk could have sought the minority leader's job back when it was open, right after the election, and chose not to. And he had it before.
He did.
And he didn't want to. So actually, Senator Miller was unopposed.
We're now going into the area of debating the budget, assuming we don't have to do a mulligan on the budget fix-up bill. What are your expectations for the budget, for the debate over the budget? It cuts aid to schools, it cuts aid to local government, expands choice in charter schools. What should the governor's budget, what type of full airing should it get?
Well, it should and it will get a full airing. I'll be very surprised there aren't 6-7 hearings around the state on it. The only just big picture disagreement I have with the governor and the budget is that we've gotten into this budget mess really over the last 20 years. During the decade of the 90s with a Republican governor, but legislatures controlled by both parties at different times, so it was a bipartisan thing. Mm-hmm. The revenues were coming in great. We had a great 1990s in terms of tax revenues, and they spent it all. They spent every dime of it, and they bonded besides that. They went in debt with bonding besides spending all the cash. They created no rainy day fund. So that was the first decade, first 10 years. The second 10 years was spent using one-time money by a Republican governor and a Democratic governor. Republican governor securitizing the tobacco settlement and spending it all in 1 year to balance the budget. Governor Doyle using federal stimulus money, one-time money, and taking money from various accounts around here, the most well-known one being the Transportation Fund and the Patients' Compensation Fund. So basically what they did for 20 years was they said, you know, everything's fine, nobody has to make any sacrifices, everybody can have what they've always had, and we don't have to raise taxes. Right. And so now we get 20 years of that, and so my difference with the governor is I think if you get into a problem in 20 years, I think if you get out of it in 4, I think you're doing pretty well, and I think the citizens would say you did pretty well, have done pretty well. He basically is trying to fix it in 2 years. I think he says 90% of it's fixed in the first 2 years.
Yeah, he does.
And I think if you did it over 4 years, I think you'd have kind of a softer landing for everybody. These cuts would occur in a more measured pace than all at once. But you can't eliminate the deficit without looking at the big chunks of money where we spend it, which is the biggest chunk is school aids. After that is Medicaid, Badger Care. Then it's
UW system. Shared revenue. Those are the big five.
And the big six now, number six, by the way, is interest and principal on the debt.
Bonding, yes. Principal and interest.
Yeah. Almost right. Is approaching the level of spending on the university and shared revenue.
Yeah, that's right.
It's $700-800 million, and I think shared revenue is $900 million, and the university $1 billion or something like that.
Okay.
So, but you had asked earlier about changes since I was here before. The big money was one. Leadership getting involved in campaigns and sort of picking primary choices, mm-hmm. primary candidate choices, and along with interest groups.
And then funding their own choices.
And funding their own choices, which has the effect of, on the Democratic side, it has the effect usually of a more left, the most left of center Democrat quite frequently is the choice. And on the Republican side, the sort of furthest right of center primary candidate is often the choice there.
Mm-hmm.
And those two candidates are, one of them usually wins. This is particularly a problem in sort of one-party districts where the primary is the whole deal. So what that produces in the legislature is Republicans further to the right of center, I guess this is my right hand, your left side, legislators further to the right of center on the Republican side, Democrats further to the left of center,
yes.
And
the gap widens.
The gap widens, there's fewer in the middle. Beyond that, it's hard to imagine it now, but back then, WEAC was a relatively bipartisan organization. They used to endorse a lot of Republican state senators, particularly outstate ones.
Wow,
I think
that's Senator, change. There's
Senator
a change,
Chilton,
sir.
Senator Krieger, Senator Thino, Senator Rood, I can remember at least those four. And WMC, which didn't usually endorse Democrats, but usually under Paul Hass's leadership, he was the head then, whereas they wouldn't endorse a Democrat, they often sort of just stayed out of races where they thought the Democrat was fairly pro-business. They would just stay out.
Okay.
You know, well, you contrast that with today, my gosh. I mean, those two organizations, WMC is entirely a Republican organization, and WEAC is entirely a Democratic organization.
Right.
You may find one exception, but I don't know.
Well, so I guess final question. 1 week after coming back from Illinois, you're worried about the Senate and its ability to work the rest of the session. Fair?
Very fair. I always think I have two jobs here. One is to vote for and push for what I believe in, on one hand, and then I also have a second responsibility to not do damage to the institution of the Senate. And unfortunately, on this issue, this matter, it was impossible to do justice to both of those goals and obligations. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I went to Illinois. I think it was for the right reasons. I make no apology for going. But I think it also set a terrible precedent, which affects my other obligation, which is the institution of the Senate.
I understand.
And so my concern is that once you do something like this, it becomes a precedent. And on many bills in the future, whoever the minority party, whoever supporting them and their supporters or interest groups, whoever they are, and that's not a bad word, they're going to say, well, if you care as much about us as those guys did back in 2011, yes, you need to go to Illinois again. And I think that would be very, very detrimental to the Senate. And so that's the reason for the constitutional amendment in the long run. In the short run, it is to sort of be an olive branch.
Have you told your fellow Democrats you wouldn't go to Illinois again on like the budget bill?
I've told some of them, and I've also told the media. So, I mean, I'm not going. So.
I understand. Okay. Senator Tim Kaine, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.